Thank you for joining me. Breaking news, the U.S. Navy official, the seven missing sailors from the collision have been found dead within the inside the ship. They were, I guess, drowned within it. There's going to be an ongoing investigation. The seven sailors found in a flooded berthing compartments after the collision. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family and friends of those missing sailors. We thank you for your service for our country. Tonight, we're here and we're investigating the mysterious death of Kurt Cobain. The documentary I've been talking about all night, Soaked in Bleach, themovie.com. It's easy to sit there and watch this movie and point fingers and look at one side or the other. And that's an important aspect of this because it raises questions. Questions about what really happened to this rock icon. Did he really kill himself with a lethal injection and a shotgun wound to the head? Was there something more nefarious going on? Well, I can tell you one thing's for certain. Just from a glossary look at the police reports, it was not investigated properly. And we can't have that. We need justice. We need to understand what happened to this man. And not just to Kurt Cobain because he's a millionaire and a famous singer. You got to think about this, folks. If we don't ask for justice in this case, how are we going to get justice for your son or your daughter, your mother, your husband, your wife, your grandfather, your husband? And when are we going to get that justice? We have to hold the law to a higher standard. We need to ask these questions. And when there is a preponderance of evidence that shines a light that there is something wrong, it needs to be investigated. This isn't just the words of three Kurt Cobain fans. This is also the word of Norm Stamper, the former police chief of Seattle, during the initial investigation after hearing from the documentarian, the evidence that was overlooked and the problems with the original investigation. Norm Stamper came forward and said, this needs to be reinvestigated. If I was still in charge, and again, I'm paraphrasing, if I was still in charge, I would reopen this investigation. That should carry a lot of weight. This should be done. For Courtney, if you're listening, for Francis, if you're listening, lead the way. You have the power to open this case and get the answer once and for all. And you deserve the truth for yourself and to be relieved of the burden of guilt, because it shouldn't hang over anyone's head. That is a cloud that no Eeyore needs. So I hope and I implore you that you take this move so that you make this motion and you get this cleared off your conscience and off of everybody so that you can forward on to your life, because I can't believe what an anchor that would feel like around anyone's neck to have any kind of shadow of doubt placed on you regarding the death of someone you loved. So I hope that you will take this opportunity to contact the Seattle police yourself and make this change. Let's open this. Let's close it the right way and get that handled. Ben, we have to go to commercial break in a moment, but before we do that, let's talk about one of the most important aspects of this case. Kurt Cobain was a junkie. There's no sugarcoating this.
Mm-hmm.
He was a heroin addict. According to the police department, according to investigators, he took a lethal dose of heroin, which was, for a hardcore addict, three times the lethal dose.
Correct.
For a passing guy like you and I who haven't done heroin, it's 10 or even 100 times the lethal dose.
Correct.
Now, again, I'm not a drug addict. I don't do drugs. I don't play in that realm. But from what I know of TV, movies, and other documentaries, somebody shoots their arm up, and especially if they're overdosing, half the time, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, the actor, they were found with the damn needle still in their arm.
That's right.
So I'm supposed to believe that Kurt Cobain, even as a hardcore addict, took three times the lethal dose for a hardcore addict, then put away his drug kit, put the caps back on the needle, which shows he's still got a lot of his faculties in play here.
Fine motor skills.
Of putting a cap on a needle, I'll tell you, as a father of a freshly found daughter that has diabetes, I keep poking my damn self with the needles as I'm trying to put the cap on, and I'm not on dope.
Right.
How is this guy doing this? Puts it all away, grabs his shotgun, flips it wrong, boom, pulls the trigger, takes himself out. How is he not unconscious in 10 seconds?
Well, you're actually touching on one of the most important objective points of the whole case. But rather than hear that answer from me, the filmmaker, let's actually hear it from the most world-renowned forensic pathologist in the world, Dr. Cyril Weck, who's actually interviewed in Soaked in Bleach. So here's the audio recording.
It's about right and wrong. It's about honor. It's about ethics. If we didn't get it right the first time, we damn well better get it right the second time. And I would tell you right now that if I were the chief today, I would reopen this investigation.
Now, that was Norm Stamper, as I had mentioned. That was his actual take on it, and I wanted you to hear that again. Now we're going to hear from the doctor, and it was the clip not firing for us? We'll come back. We'll come back to that. Let's take a quick break. We'll load up that clip. And I'm curious, you have to have heard some flashback on this. What do Chris Novicelli and Dave Grohl have to say about this? Do they have a thought on this process? Are they angry? Are they skeptical? Are they wanting justice? We'll get some answers from our guests when we return. Stay tuned. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host, Dave Schrader. So much has been said about the death of Kurt Cobain, and now that we've shed some light and some information on this, we're looking at the mystery that definitely deserves to be reinvestigated. We were just talking, and the audio is now queued back up, but Ben, again, set this up. What will we hear? I had asked the question about how do you survive a lethal dose like this? Is this even something that he should have been able to do? And you've got some audio from the doctor who you said is...
Dr. Weck is pretty much top-notch, and most people would agree. So I was glad to have him address this, which to me is possibly the most objective fact here concerning the blood morphine levels. And also the fact that's been argued a lot. A lot of people aren't really getting centered on another major fact, which is that it's never been documented, according to Dr. Weck's records that he shared, of someone shooting themselves at all when they're on heroin. So not only is the blood morphine level impossible for Kurt to have been able to function and physically pick up a gun, but it seems to be that nobody, regardless of their life's problems, once they get that high from heroin, they aren't looking to kill themselves anymore.
All right, let's go to that audio. This is straight from the doctor's mouth.
Comparing oral methadone to intravenous heroin. What's the trite expression? Apples and oranges. It's much worse than apples and oranges. It might be peaches and asparagus that you're comparing. I'm truly amazed that a competent forensic scientist would have made that kind of comparison. Any re-examination should not even be actively participated in by the Seattle Police Department. To expect them to conduct an objective, detached, unbiased investigation, come back 20 years later and say, hey man, we blew it. It flies in the face of common sense. The Kurt Cobain death demands a reopening by an objective set of experts, and until that is done, then one cannot feel comfortable in saying that Kurt Cobain's death was a clear-cut suicide. No matter what anybody believes, this happened far too quickly for the kinds of things to be accomplished that need to be done in this kind of death investigation. This would be, in fact, a classical example for how an investigation should not be done. Should the case be reopened, my answer is unequivocally, unhesitatingly, yes, the case should be reopened.
That's powerful. Boy, you can't beat a statement like that.
I agree.
Unbelievable. Before we go to the calls, which we're going to do in just a few seconds, the majority of the emails and social media questions I'm getting, Tom, what about Chris and Dave Grohl from Nirvana? Where do they stand on this? Have they ever weighed in publicly?
You know, they waited for a year after Kurt's death. And that was always surprising to me that they wouldn't come right out with a comment. They refused to talk to the press about it or answer questions. And if Kurt was as suicidal as Courtney made him out to be, and as he was portrayed by the press and the stories that were fed to the press, it seemed like they would be saying things like, yeah, we knew this was going to happen. He was really going downhill. And, you know, it was only a matter of time, et cetera. But they did make statements about the fact that they were caught off guard. They were shocked. You know, they were so surprised by this whole thing. So after a year, Chris Novoselic started commenting, and he mentioned that he believed it was a suicide, and he still does to this day. Dave Grohl hadn't said a whole lot. He was on Howard Stern once, though, where he made some comments that you could read into real easily, where he was highly suspicious of things. But the fact is, nobody nobody, unless they were in the room with Kurt Cobain that night or had access to all the medical evidence and the evidence on the scene and the photographs of the crime scene, their opinion doesn't matter. I don't care if it's his best friend or if it's somebody back in Tennessee that never met the guy and just listened to his music. It's just an opinion. I wouldn't expect his best friend, his wife, his mother, me, or anybody to be able to say anything positively without all of that evidence unless I happen to be in the room with him when he died.
That's something to consider as well. I know there was some speculation regarding Kurt Cobain and an alleged affair with the bassist of Hole, Courtney Love's band. And I know we were going to talk to her mother on the show tonight. Our outgoing lines are not working. We're having trouble. We can't dial out to get her on the line. Our current lines are completely filled. But I wanted to address that real quickly. Do we know anything? Was there any proof to this allegation that Kurt was, in fact, planning to leave Courtney Love for the bassist in her band?
I don't know about proof for that. I have heard through the grapevine from various sources things that Kurt had said. One thing was that she's so talented and such a beautiful soul, but if Courtney knew she'd kill me, was the expression he supposedly had said to a friend. And Kristen was a very talented writer. She was an authentic musician and artist. So, I mean, I can definitely see how she and Kurt would have had a lot in common.
And I can say from conversations that I had with Courtney that Courtney was extremely jealous of Kristen Paff.
Now, here's an aspect of this that many people don't know and escaped a lot of the news and a lot of the attention, that it was just a few months after the death of Kurt Cobain that she died under what was believed to be another drug overdose, but in a sense, according to her mother, also kind of like mysterious situation. She was planning on a big move. She was leaving the band Hole. She wanted out.
Correct.
She had her whole U-Haul packed up, ready to move and start over. And suddenly, mysteriously, she's found dead in a bathtub of an overdose.
Yeah, she had gotten clean of heroin in December of 93. And then I believe it was June 15th in 94. So we literally just passed the 23rd anniversary of her death.
And all the exact same investigators investigated her death. Sergeant Cameron, Dr. Hartshorn, the medical examiner, all of the same Seattle authorities investigated Kristen Paff's death as investigated Kurt Cobain's death.
There's another very interesting fact. Here you've got Kurt Cobain gone. You've got Kristen gone. Both have connections to one person who has implicated herself in ways in this story and in all the audio recordings that make it worthy of investigating so that her name can be cleared in this case as well. Janet, I know that you may be listening while you're out on the road. I'm sorry we're unable to get to you, but our thoughts and prayers are with you on the 23rd anniversary of the passing of your daughter. She was a talented, beautiful artist, and she will be missed. Let's go to the phone lines. Wild card, line one, Kathy from Lacey, Washington. Welcome to the show.
Hi. My question to your guest tonight is it possible that he was killed somewhere else of an overdose and then brought back to the greenhouse later since nobody saw him before?
I don't know, Ben, I don't know if you can hear over the phone line. It's a little quiet for us. Are you able to hear this question?
Yeah, I hear it fine.
Okay,
sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure that both guests could hear you.
Yeah. Okay, so I knew a lot of people in Seattle. I used to live in Seattle, and in the U District area, I was very familiar with it. Len Staley died of a heroin overdose a block away from a friend of mine who died. She was not, I went to go find her the next day, and she wasn't at home. But I called her mother, and her mother came to find her, and her body was brought back to her apartment.
Okay. Do you have a specific question regarding this case?
That's why I think that he was killed somewhere else and brought back.
Yeah, we get that a lot. We get a lot of people that believe that he was killed first and then brought up to the greenhouse. That's something that's very easily determined by even probably a patrol officer. It's
because of
really
blood splatter.
It's really not rocket science to determine whether somebody was killed, where they were found, or whether they were moved to where they were found. And I believe he died right where he was found.
All right, let's go to Wildcard Line 2, Gordon in Lakeland, Florida. Welcome to the show. What's your question for our guest?
Thank you for taking my call, Dave, Tom, Benjamin. First, no disrespect meant, but since Thomas, since I know you didn't trust Courtney from the get-go, why wouldn't you stake out Main House? And also, if that one detective was corrupt, why would he ask the Courtney Love to destroy the suicide note? Because the suicide note would actually help her. I'll hang on the line in case you have questions for me.
Well, taking the second part first, he told her to destroy it because it was not a suicide note. And she had been telling everybody that it was a suicide note, and he knew he could read it. He knew what it was about, and he said, I'd get rid of this if I were you.
And that's the note from Rome.
From Rome, yeah.
Okay.
And Courtney, I have on a recording of Courtney and I talking about that, and she tells me that it was really a nasty note. That, you know, it was a...
And it might show her in a bad light. So
exactly.
If she releases this, it could end up in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
You want to keep it quiet. So that's why they were encouraging.
Now, remind me the first part of
surveilling the house. Why didn't you, if you were speculative of this, why didn't you just surveil it on your own?
If I were a police officer working on this case, sure, I would call the shots and I would do it my way. When you're a private investigator, you're working for a client and they tell you what they want you to do. And you don't argue with them. You can give them advice, which I did. I constantly said, I think we should be watching the house. Every time I mentioned the house, it's like, oh, no, Callie's there. He's watching the house. Don't worry about the house. She always took me off of the house. And I always tried to tell her we should be watching that house.
Let's go to Wildcard Line 3, Charles in Elgin, Texas. We have just 2 minutes left. Did you have a quick question or thought about this?
Yeah, sure. It's funny how quick police are to sort of jump to conclusions and stop investigations. You know, they already settle on something, especially suicide or something like that. Especially suicide. They always quickly want to do that. And when my dad was murdered, it's been really hard to even get in and even get an investigation going, because they just want to go to the first easiest conclusion and not look into anything any farther. I have a hard time with it myself.
Understandable. Well, and we're sorry for your loss, of course, Charles. Thank you for giving us a call. SoakedInBleachTheMovie.com, that's the website you want to go visit to learn more about this documentary. You can watch it on Netflix. I think it's YouTube. I mean, it's everywhere. Go look for it and find it. Amazon.com. And if you'd like to see more of the work that Tom Grant did for yourself, CobainCase.com. Don't just question and think you know the story. Go listen. This guy's got, we've just played a few snippets tonight. This guy has tons of clips and information where you can hear from the people involved in the story themselves. Educate yourself with that. Again, that's CobainCase.com, CobainCase.com to get even more information. If you like shows like this and you're interested in true crime, I ask you to join me every week. I do True Crime Tuesday. You can find information by visiting darknessradio.com and clicking on the True Crime Tuesday banner. You can subscribe right there. We'll bring you some of the most fascinating, eerie, and frightening true cases of crime from all of history. Some of the most unbelievable and bizarre crimes. And then we lighten it up at the end with some dumb crimes, stupid criminals. Florida Man being our favorite. He always seems to be up to some kind of shenanigans. So you can check that out for yourself. Go check it out at darknessradio.com. Click on the True Crime Tuesday banner for more information. We'll be back, Soaked in Bleach. That's what we're covering here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for joining me this evening. And again, a very happy Father's Day to all listening. We mentioned Janet Pfaff and her daughter, Kristen, who was the bass player for Hole, who passed away 2 months after the death of Kurt Cobain. Janet has written a book called Unfinished Rhapsody, The Other Side of Fame. That's Unfinished Rhapsody, The Other Side of Fame. If you want more information on that story, we encourage you to check that book out as well. If you like what you hear on Coast to Coast AM and you've just tuned in on your drive home and you've missed a large portion of tonight's show and wish you could catch up on it, well, we've made it as easy as we possibly can for you to catch up on this and every episode. As a matter of fact, if you sign up right now for a one-year subscription, it breaks down to 15 cents a day, and that gives you 5 years of past episodes, 7 days a week, 4 hours a day. That is countless hours. Well, countless by me. I can't sit here and count them all. But anyway, it's more than you could possibly imagine of the best in overnight talk radio and entertainment, covering every topic you could ever want to hear. And you could pick and choose. Why not? You deserve it. Get it now. 15 cents a day to subscribe to Coast AM with George Norrie. You can find information by going to coasttocoastam.com and signing up. I want to mention real quickly as we're talking about this, this is another one of the overwhelming questions, and I can't ascribe it to one person because I've had 100 emails on this specific topic I thought I'd address real quickly. Why, if you shoot yourself up with a lethal dose of heroin, why shoot yourself with a shotgun? My guess is if he really was suicidal, if he really wanted to make sure the job was done, he might have shot himself up for that one final rush and then shot himself to make sure that the job would be done. Because we know that many people have survived drug shots that they shouldn't have, theoretically, or might have been left in a state that he would not have wanted to survive in. So there is that possibility. I don't know if you have any other light to shed on that.
Well, Tom, but I'd like to say please. That I wrote that over 20 years ago, those exact words. And I said, after listing several of the other major components of this investigation, mm-hmm. the bottom line is, why would you shoot up with a euphoric drug, a lethal overdose, and then pick up a shotgun and blast what you, I'm sure he thought it was going to blow his head apart. It didn't, because it was bird shot and he had a thick skull. But he would have thought that that was going to blow his head off if he really did that himself. And he had a two-year-old daughter. Why would he want to leave that image for his little two-year-old daughter that everybody knows that he loved? Why not just shoot up with that lethal dose of heroin, lay back and go to sleep with a smile on your face, knowing you're never going to wake up? It just doesn't make sense. And it was so gratifying for me to hear Dr. Wecht say the exact same thing in the film. We didn't hear that on that last clip, but on the clip that was missing, he did make that same comment. And when I heard him say that in the film, oh, wow, he got it. He really got it.
Soaked in Bleach. You can check it out for yourself on Netflix, Amazon. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, wrap up with your questions right here on Coast to Coast AM. This is the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. We've got more calls lining up. Let's get back to this. Wildcard line four, Dan from Illinois. What did you... Oh, did we lose Dan? All right, let's go to wildcard line five, Boris in Corpus Christi. Boris, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, Boris. What did you want to say to us this evening?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Anyway, I watched a lot of CII before I got turned to Coast and Coast. And that note that he was talking about Courtney could be interpreted as I'm leaving you from this life, not like divorcing you and stuff, you know? That's what I was looking at.
Right. Yeah, that very well could be interpreted that it was just his breakup note and not suicide. Thank you for weighing in on that, Boris. East of the Rockies, Joe in Kentucky, what did you want to share with us this evening?
Okay, I was in Seattle, and I used to take, I was a drug dealer back in them days. I used to take drugs to that house. But see, there was a girl named Jessie that I knew that was staying out there, and I would bring drugs, and sometimes she would get drugs for Kurt. But the thing was is that she said that the green room had so much security to where I had to walk up. She told me not to pull up, but to walk up because they said it had security cameras. And to my knowledge, the guy that was the electrician guy that found him was actually the same security guy that installed the cameras of the green room. And they called it the green room because he used to grow his pot in there. And I remember one time he came down when I was out there making a transaction with this girl, Jessie, and he had this little, looked like a cigar box, I guess, or something like that. He was really weird, but and my thing was, why where was all the security at? when he committed suicide.
Good question. And thank you for calling in. Was there any security footage, cameras, anything?
No, the camera had not been installed yet. They had done some security work. Courtney had told me that they were in the process of installing a security system up there, but hadn't completed it, and that's why she called that electrician in to continue working on that. I think there was another reason she called that electrician in when she did too, but
find the body?
Yeah, I think I know the Jesse that you're talking about, so your story does sound a little bit credible, but Jesse probably thought there was security there that just wasn't there. Maybe she was told there was security there to, if people think there's security there and they tell their friends, don't come around here because we got security all over the place, But I can't think of any security there that would have recorded anybody going up to the greenhouse.
West of the Rockies, Linda in Auburn, Washington. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave. I'm glad you took my call because I have a question for Tom, the investigator. I was wondering where Callie was during that week from April 1st. During that week it happened. And I was wondering if, Tom, if you interviewed Callie and also what happened to him afterwards.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Linda. Well, let's give him a chance to answer on that. Where was Callie during that week? Yeah.
Callie was at the house most of the time because I was with Courtney when she was calling the house, and we also got the phone records from the Peninsula Hotel. Rosemary helped me do that. And we could see that Courtney was calling the house to talk to Callie. And so we know he was there, although he told everybody that he was coming and going because Courtney was calling too much, so that a lot of times he wasn't there, and sometimes he was going over to his girlfriend's house. Yes, I did interview Callie. He did, by the way, on Thursday when he found out that I was up there, he left. And he flew to L.A. initially, and then Courtney paid to have him sent to a drug rehab in Arizona or some other place out of state. So I had the feeling at the time that Callie left Seattle because he didn't want to talk to me. He didn't. He got nervous and he wanted to get out of there.
But as a police investigator, why weren't the police interested in this? Well, you've got a potential suspect who stayed at the house, and one thing we didn't touch on was the weird note he left on the stairs.
Right.
Kurt, you son of a bitch, why did you get in this house and not let me know you're here? This really weirdly orchestrated note.
And I have a tape of Rosemary and I talking where she agrees with me that note sounded phony, like it was made up, like somebody either told Kelly what to write or he made it up himself just for me to find.
Almost really like he knew where the body he found Kurt, right, perhaps, or knew more about it but wanted to deflect.
Yeah, it seemed more like a cover letter. But I was never able to meet or talk to Kelly until a couple of weeks later when I finally got him to come to my office in Beverly Hills and sit down, because I had handwriting experts that were telling me that note I found on the stairs was written by a woman and sort of describing Courtney's character and everything. Mm. And I was having a hard time believing that. It didn't add up because she would have had to fly up there and fly back in order to do that. And so I had Callie come in, and the main purpose in having him come in was to test his handwriting. I gave him a felt tip pen and a piece of paper about the same size as the note on the stairs, and I asked him if he could remember what he wrote, and he came really close to exactly what was written in that letter. And sure enough, you hold that up, because I made copies of the letter on the stairs. I left the letter there, but I got it later from Eric Erlandson, and I took it and made copies of it. And you hold those two together, and it was really obvious that Callie wrote that letter that was left on the stairs. As far as the police interviewing Callie, I expressed my suspicions to the police. They did interview him by telephone.
What?
Say that you're investigating something as a possible homicide, and yet you interview a person who was living at the house at the time that this person was either killed or allegedly committed suicide.
And then fled the town.
And then flee and leave. And then, oh, yeah, we talked to Callie. We talked to him on the phone. That's what I got from the police. They interviewed Callie over the telephone.
All right, wild card, line one, Jack from Palm Springs. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. I want to say hello to Tom Grant. I haven't talked to him in a number of years. I'm in the documentary, Jack Briggs, in the original documentary by Nick Broomfield.
Okay.
We helped find El Duce. He had been talking, just to clarify who El Duce was, after the death or the murder or whatever you want to call it, suicide, he was telling everybody around town that he had been offered $50,000 by Courtney Love to kill Kurt Cobain, and he didn't take the offer at the time, he said. But that was something that was told to everybody. And so we found, heard about the story, and we brought him to Tom Grant. We got a lie detector that he took. He passed the lie detector by Dr. Edward Gelb, the most advanced lie detector man in the world. And we believe the story to this day. Now, it got caught in a lot of politics in the whole thing because I have to be truthful in the whole thing. Tom is a great guy, but sometimes he's his own worst enemy because when he heard that El Duce's real name was Eldon Hoke, if you remember this, Tom, you said, oh, Eldon Hoke, that sounds like Hoax. He must be lying. Well, that's insane because that was his name. He can't.
Well, let me interrupt you here for just a second, Jack. You did not have El Duce polygraphed. Hard copy television had El Duce polygraphed. I was in on that. I was a part of that. And I went and talked to Dr. Gelb afterward. And I agree, El Duce passed the polygraph. But don't try to take credit for having him polygraphed, and you never brought him to me. Your partner, your friend, called me and tried to get me to go on the television show with him immediately the next day, and I refused to do it. I said, first I want him to file a police report, then I want him to pass a polygraph. And I certainly wasn't going to pay for the polygraph, but when hard copy got involved in this, they paid for the polygraph. You did not have him polygraphed. Hard copy had him polygraphed.
And did he pass?
Yes, he did pass.
All right. And now the other strange aspect of this, and although it was covered in that documentary, he, if I recall, Ben, he also was murdered or died suspiciously.
Yeah, I believe he died next to the train tracks, and it was like within a week from the time that he gave that interview to Nick Broomfield.
Wow. All right, let's go to wildcard line two. John in Long Beach, what did you want to weigh in with?
Yeah, real quick, the thing about this Kristen Pass Pfaff, it's why would somebody load their van up and then go take heroin? That, there's questions there, too. But I wanted to just ask you real quick, why would the police, are you intimating that the police might have been, there might have been some police corruption, or at least they were, you know, they botched it. What was the, if they were corrupt or whatever, what would be the percentage in them? Why would they be motivated to, you know, interview somebody over the phone and obviously skirt some regulations or, you know, common practice?
Well, the answer in that was already from the you've got the chief of police who was going to fire him because he was already proven to be corrupt and was stealing from crime scenes over, I think it was $10,000, or one of his other officers stole $10,000.
And he was helping them cover that up.
He was helping him cover it up. So you've already got a corrupt police officer, which may open him up for bribery from somebody directly associated with this case. So, and if it was lazy police work that you didn't want to get busted for, that would be the motivation, I would guess, unless you see a different aspect of this, Tom. Thank you for calling in, John. Do you see any other aspect? Or?
Oh, no, I agree. They really honestly believed it was a suicide when they walked in that room. And once they allowed that spokesperson within an hour to go down and announce that there was a so-called suicide note found in the room, that told the press that he committed suicide. Once the press started reporting that Kurt Cobain committed suicide, what are the police going to do? Oh, no, you misunderstood. No, from that point on, it was going to be a suicide no matter what.
Wildcard line five, Andre from Los Angeles. You knew Kurt and Courtney yourself?
Yeah, I actually knew almost all the people you're talking about in the Los Angeles punk scene. And a couple of things I just want to clarify. I knew El Duce since 1980. I know Kali. I knew Courtney. I met Kurt when he first toured with the Chili Peppers.
Okay, what was your point that you wanted to bring up on this?
I want to say a couple of things because, like, I actually knew these people. First of all, Kali didn't do
anything to anyone, whether like the writing of the note, whatever. I can't speak to that. I wasn't there, but I've known him for 17 years, and I know him very, very well. There's no way he was involved with anything illicit. He was the babysitter for their daughter, and his principal concern was making sure that their daughter wasn't harmed. I've seen Courtney was in Alex Cox.
Well, wait a minute. You just said that he didn't do anything. He was a known drug addict, so saying that he didn't do anything illicit already kind of puts him under the microscope, right? And Tom, and thank you for calling in, Andre. He was a drug addict, correct?
Yeah, and of course, you're certainly welcome to your opinion.
Right.
I mean, people, whenever they get arrested, their family and friends say, oh, he could never do that. So,
right. But and again, we're not pointing the finger.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the point, and again, we want to cover this. It's the point that there was much that was wrong with the investigation in the initial run. It should be re-examined so that all of the possibilities are cleared and that we can finally put to rest the soul of Kurt Cobain once and for all for his friends, family, and for his fans. Quickly, west of the Rockies, we literally have about 2 minutes left here. John in Tacoma, what did you want to share?
Yeah, I am a recovering drug addict, and I was in a drug rehab facility with Dylan Carlson in 1995 in Wenatchee, Washington. I didn't know that was Dylan Carlson at the time. Had no idea. Got out of the drug rehab facility and relapsed with Dylan Carlson. He was the first person I ever injected drugs with, and that was in 1995. And almost on a daily basis, I would walk with him over to a local mini-mart that was by there, and he was receiving Western Unions from somebody over on the West Coast. He said it was when he was his band manager, but I overheard the phone conversations, and I know for a fact that it was a female, and I just found it very suspicious. All this is very suspicious, and I don't believe Kurt Cobain killed himself. I believe he was murdered.
Thank you for calling in and weighing in. We appreciate the call. Listen, folks, again, the light has swung on many different possibilities. Our guests are in no, well, at least our documentarian, Ben, is not trying to say Courtney Love or Callie or Dylan are responsible for the death of Kurt Cobain. What they're saying is, look, if there's enough doubt and reason that these people could be involved in this, and not just some scatterbrain conspiracy, but we have reasons for each one of these people that could make sense for the death of this rock icon, and we know that the investigation was not done properly, let's reinvestigate, let's open this up, let's make sure that this gets done properly. And that's where the story comes. That's what we were hoping for. That's what we want to bring to the audience with this documentary and the work that these two men have done, and tireless work by Tom Grant. Tom, thank you for joining us this evening and coming into studio with
me. Thank you. Great job.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Go check out his website, CobainCase.com. And thank you for staying up late with us on the East Coast and calling in tonight to be a part of the show with us, Ben.
Well, thank you so much, Dave, for having us. I really appreciate this.
Soaked in Bleach, themovie.com. Check it out for yourself. I want to thank Nathan and Donna here at Home Office for allowing me to broadcast from the LA studios. It's been great. Special thanks to my producer, Chris Boros, Amy Rouse, and of course, my social media expert and girlfriend, Cassie Plummer, for all the help. And then keep your thoughts and prayers for my co-host on Beyond the Darkness, Tim Dennis, as he's dealing with sepsis and other issues. We pray for a healing. Have a very happy Father's Day. Love one another. Be kind. I'll be back with you again in July. Thank you, George and Lisa, for allowing me to sit in. You've been listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.